Hey everyone, and welcome back to Metaverse Musings, a research-focused podcast that's part of Delphi Digital. Together, we'll explore the foundations of what many believe to be the internet's successor, a virtual extension of the natural world where most of us will eventually live, work, and play. To some, it represents our next great milestone as a network species, and to others, it is something to fear. With our guests, we explore the technology, philosophy, and culture of this brave new world. If you're not yet subscribed to the Delphi Research Portal, then I fear for your soul. You're missing out on the most incisive analysis that the digital asset space has to offer. Seriously, check it out. As a reminder to the degens out there, nothing said on this podcast is a solicitation to buy or sell any security or token or to make any financial decisions. Once again, this is not financial advice. Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of Metaverse Musings. Today I'm delighted to introduce you all to Will, who is the founder of a super exciting project called Cryptoys. Will, thank you for joining us.
Awesome, Piers. Thank you for having me, man. Excited to be here.
To start us off, could you please give us a bit of background on you, sort of what you've been doing prior to this, and I guess ultimately sort of what led up to this?
Sure. So born and raised in Miami, got started in tech when I was about 12 years old. I got my 1,000 hours of America Online via CD-ROM in the mail. And that was my introduction to the internet. And as most kids would, when they first get online, they'd spend half their time in chat rooms. That was kind of the AOL days. That's what you would do. So I was really into like professional wrestling as a kid. WCW, WWF, NWO, that whole world. Folks listening that know that will remember those days. And was in a wrestling chat room one day and some guy says, hey, can somebody make me a fan site on GeoCities? I'll pay them $100. And $100 sounded really good, you know, to a kid. So basically I said, sure, I'll figure out a way to do it, and opened up GeoCities and found a HTML editor and started learning how to code one line at a time. And that was my foray into entrepreneurship. Went back in the wrestling chat room, asked, you know, who else wants a wrestling fan site? I do it for $100 a pop. And I got my first 10 customers that way. That's how I made my first $1,000. And that's when the entrepreneur bug bit me. Did a few side projects, did some side hustling, you know, as a teenager. Went to Florida State University. I came back from Florida State University back to Miami. And I started my first venture-backed company. That was called Live Ninja. Live Ninja was a video chat marketplace where you would buy and sell video chat sessions on different topics. So I did that for a number of years. We raised money from Comcast Ventures, Citi Ventures, ended up selling that company in 2017 to IDT Telecom. And I had a 3-year earnout with IDT and, you know, built this little side project, you know, called Cryptoys, in late 2018, and, you know, worked on it nights and weekends here and there whenever I could, when I wasn't, you know, doing my main 9-to-5. Built it as a passion project for my daughter. And then slowly but surely, one step at a time, it's kind of how we got to today.
Love to hear it. Love to hear it. And yeah, perhaps it would be useful if you could give an overview, like sort of what is Cryptoys? What are you guys up to? What have you been working on?
Sure. So the best way to think about Cryptoys is we're building a digital toy company. Like if you think of a company like Mattel or Hasbro, and if those companies were created today and they were digital first and NFT native, what would those companies look like? Like, how would you make digital toys? So we're going down that rabbit hole and exploring, you know, those ideas. So we're creating fully interactive digital toys and collectibles. And then what good are digital toys if you can't play with them, right? So we're creating games and experiences around the toys. So for you could have some amazing like play and earn capabilities, so you can take your toys and do different things with them and have some really amazing experiences online. So that's kind of what we're doing at a high level.
That's super cool. And could you maybe talk to us a little bit about sort of what kind of inspired that? You said it started as a side project you're sort of you know, tinkering with on the weekends and in the evenings, but you know, where did the sort of vision for it come from? And yeah, I guess what kind of sort of drew you to this concept?
Yeah, so again, had sold my prior company. So one day in 2018, I was working from home shortly after the acquisition, and my daughter is really into these toys called blind bags or surprise unboxings. They're basically like the hottest trend in physical toys. They are lots of different versions. There's LOL Surprise and there's Hatchimals, but basically it is what the physical toy industry is really baked around these days. It's really the thing that's kind of a big revenue driver and what kids are really into. So my daughter has been collecting these things for years. I was spending hundreds, if not thousands of dollars on these things for her. And one day I'm working from home. She screams from the playroom. She's like, "Oh my God, Dad, come quick, come quick. I found it. Finally, I found the ultra rare. I got the ultra rare." And I go in and she's holding this little like gold plastic doll. She looks at it for like 10 seconds and then she throws it in the bin with all the other ones just to kind of collect dust. You know, she goes, "You don't really do anything with these things after you open them up. It's like a basketball card, but in like a toy form." And as soon as she said the word ultra rare, that was like the big light bulb moment for me, because this is 2018. This is right when CryptoKitties had launched. And CryptoKitties was like one of the first like mainstream NFT projects. It was making headlines left and right in 2018 that it brought down the Ethereum blockchain or congested it. CryptoKitties were selling for like six figures, you know, on auction. And I thought to myself, I'm like, oh my goodness, here's this multi-billion dollar segment of the toy industry that's predicated on collectability and scarcity. We can now do these digitally for the first time ever, thanks to NFTs. So I go to my daughter, I'm like, "Sweetheart, what if I were to make you the digital version of LOL Surprise, Hatchimals, and these like blind bag surprise toy unboxings? Like, you could chase after them, you could collect them, get the rare ones. But then when you actually get them, you actually do things with them, like play games with them, interact with them. Would that be something you'd be interested in?" And she's like, "Oh my God, Dad, that'd be amazing. I'd love that." So I thought to myself, I'm like, "Hey, why don't I build this little side project nights and weekends for my daughter? It could be this like little like bonding experience that her and I have around creating these things together." So started off like that. Then I went to my co-founders at Live Ninja. Emilio, my CTO, has a daughter around the same age as my daughter, Victoria. And I said, "Bro, I have a pitch for you. Blind bags on the blockchain. What do you think?" And he was like, "Dude, we have to do this idea because I'm spending thousands of dollars on these things. They're littered all over my house. Let's do it." So we got together, me, Emilio, Alfonso. And then Emilio said, "Hey, listen, if you really want to blow this thing out of the water, I got a buddy of mine that used to work with at Disney. He then went to go work at Konami Games. He's an amazing 3D artist and animator. So he joined the team, Freddie, as our fourth co-founder. And we started working on this concept called Cryptoys, and we just started working on it in 2018. And I mean, dude, everybody looked at me like I was freaking insane, because like I had just sold Live Ninja, and like I was pretty well connected in the Miami tech scene because I've been building that company there for years, hosting a lot of community events and stuff like that. So like I would go out to lunch with people and they'd be like, "Will, like, you just sold Live Ninja, man. Like, what's the next move? Like, what are you going to do next? Super excited to hear." I'm like, "Well, let me show you this digital panda that I'm working on." And they're like, "Uh-huh." I'm like, "It lives on the blockchain." And and they're like, "Sure it does, Will. Sure it does. Yeah." Like, "Check. We'll take the check now." Yeah. So from 2018 to 2020, I looked like I was absolutely out of my freaking mind. And then in 2020, you know, we just kept chipping away at it, nights and weekends, making a little progress here and there. And then as the market started to turn, particularly thanks to, I give all the credit in the world to NBA Top Shot for really exposing a lot of people to NFTs and digital collectibles. We got a lot of interest inbound from VCs and people that wanted to back the company. So I told my guys, I'm like, "Look, if I can raise a round for us, you're all putting in your 2 weeks notice and we're doing this thing full time." And they said, "Absolutely, let's do it." So that's how we went off into the races in the last year or so.
I love it. No, very, very cool sort of origin story there. Excited to see what the daughter thinks of it all as it comes to life. I'd like to sort of double click a bit on, you know, what you're actually sort of like doing with these characters, right? You mentioned there's sort of like games, like maybe you could talk us through a bit more of, I guess, the Cryptoids universe, the types of functionality that's unlocked through these characters. You know, obviously, most people are familiar with stuff like Tamagotchis. It was crazy to see like the whole digital pet concept in an early incarnation, how big, you know, that could get. Curious about, some of the sort of functionality in your ecosystem.
Yeah. So the way we think about this, like there's three pillars to the company. Okay. So you have digital toys and collectibles. You have original IP and entertainment, like creating characters and backstories and animated series and whatnot. And then you have games, because again, what good are digital toys if you can't play with them and interact with them? So we're building games. So a lot of people see what we're building and they call us the NFT native Nintendo. And at first I was like, okay, that's an interesting comparison. But the more I heard about it, the more it made sense, because Nintendo has those same three pillars, but they started off on the gaming side. They created a gaming platform with their own original IP, Mario, Luigi, Zelda, Princess Peach, et cetera. Then they started doing licensing deals and bringing other IP onto the Nintendo platform. They have original entertainment like Mario cartoons and movies. And then they get in the toy industry, right? You can get Mario action figures and whatnot, you know, at different stores and on Amazon and online. We have those same pillars. We start with digital toys and collectibles. We're also building original content, an animated series, and games. So that's a way to think about us in a way. Now, what we're building is beyond just a game. Our whole approach is that games are super cyclical and they take a long time to build. Like, I'm sorry, dude. I see a lot of these like NFT projects announced that we're building a game and like, you know, this is like, I'm like, are you ready for a 3 to 4 year journey? Because that's how long it takes to build these freaking things. You know, it is a big process. You don't build a game overnight. It takes time. And they're cyclical, where you could spend years building a game, customers could enjoy it for a period of time, but then decide that they're bored of the experience and want to move on to something else. Look at like Angry Birds, for example. Angry Birds was like all the rage 10 years ago. It was like the best game ever on mobile. People got bored with that gaming dynamic and that whole, you know, ecosystem, and they move on to other things. So our whole approach is we build a platform, a gaming platform. And we constantly release fresh experiences in the form of mini games, not complex like games with like huge, rich metas that take like, you know, years and years to build. And you hopefully get the hypothesis right and customers like it at the end of the day. We build toys and collectibles and then simple experiences and fun experience for you to do new things with those toys all the time. And we're talking about like mini game concepts, like carnival style stuff. Things that you can like play with, like, you know, in a few minutes, if you have like 5 minutes in between a meeting or whatnot, or you just want to decompress for 10 minutes, nothing where you're like, you know, sonked out and like playing for like an hour, 2 hours. You might play Cryptoys for 2 hours and we hope you enjoy that experience if you play for that long, but this is meant really for a casual gamer. Like if you look at like casual, like games on mobile, which is really what's been responsible for the huge growth of like when people say, there's over 3 billion active gamers in the world, you're attributing a lot of that to casual games on mobile. So like our whole approach is like going after that market and giving people a lot of fun casual games in the Cryptoys ecosystem and in that world. So you could think of us like the Nintendo platform, and your Cryptoys, the toys themselves, are like gaming cartridges. And when you buy a Cryptoy, you unlock new games and experiences through your Cryptoy, all with a play and earn component. And you notice I say play and earn, not play to earn, because I don't like the term play to earn. It feels like a job, and I think it actually does more harm than good when you talk about play to earn, because you're like, I'm playing to earn. No, I'm playing to have fun. That's first and foremost, and earning is a secondary benefit because I'm in Web3 and NFTs and I'm, you know, playing in that space. So that's what we're building, and making Web3 and blockchain gaming as accessible as can be for people.
Right. Totally makes a lot of sense. So then we'd also like to understand, I guess, what like sort of the default experience is going to be in terms of like the, you know, I guess the companion sort of aspect of the whole project, right? Like having these little sort of characters that, especially, you know, for the younger audiences, they can sort of like grow with and interact with.
Yeah.
I believe there's a pretty interesting sort of AI dimension to this as well that I'd love to click upon. So yeah, would love some sort of color on that.
Yeah. So what we're building is, you know, something that we're going to be building hopefully for the rest of our lives. This is years and years of a journey that we're starting right now. And it's a really big lift of a project. Like this, from an ambition perspective, like we're not short on that whatsoever. Like there's a lot here. And you can't do it all at once. It's just impossible. So you have to kind of have a roadmap and stagger this out as best as you can, as you continue to scale the team, as you continue to scale the community and learn what people want. So the first thing that we're launching, and that's going to happen over the next couple months here, is the toys themselves, the Genesis line of Cryptoys. that you'll be able to buy, trade, collect, etc. And initially, you'll be able to build out your, you know, we call it a backpack instead of a wallet, a little more on brands. You build out your backpack with all these different toys. And there are lots of, you know, earning capabilities through just the game of collecting these toys initially. And right from the get-go, you're going to be able to take your toy, unbox it, take it out of the packaging. This is a whole interactive unboxing experience, and then take it for a spin. We actually have the world, at least the engine of the world, already built on day one that you'll be able to just run around with your toys and do different things. And then we're releasing the other layers on top of that world, like the items, the skills, and then the the experiences and the games around the toys. So like we're starting on this initial launch is like you want to be a Genesis Cryptoy holder. You'll be able to get that over the next couple of months. And then we're constantly going to be releasing new lines of toys, fresh experiences, and games later on in the year, including announcing some really big licensing partners to take their IP over to the Cryptoys universe, which we're really, really excited about. An AI component is a huge portion of this. You mentioned the AI piece. So you're going to be able to interact with your Cryptoys and have a two-way kind of engagement experience. It's not just like, hey, I'm telling it to do this and it does that. Yes, you're able to do that, but you're also able to have experiences through an AI component of the platform as part of a different experience that we're launching. You know, so sure, playing games are great. Sure, you want to do things actively, but sometimes maybe you just want to have a conversation or interact or have someone tell you a joke or just cheer you up if you're having a bad day, or tell you what the weather is like, you know, next week. And I think we underestimate peers like these consumer-facing AI companions that we have. I mean, I'm referring to Amazon Alexa and Siri and Google Home, right? You and I and our generation, we were slowly baked into that. Like we started getting the initial version of Siri and it was kind of clunky, and then it started to get better, and then Alexa was in our house and whatever. So we just got used to it and we use it sometimes, but it's more like a novelty. This next generation, and I have a front row seat to it, my kids, my daughter is 9, my son's about to turn 8, and my youngest is about to turn 1. So I'm talking primarily about my two oldest. They're born into the world where these AI assistants are part of the house and they use it every single day. Like Alexa is like part of our family. Like my daughter on a daily basis, Alexa, what's 47 times 3? Alexa, what's the weather next week? Alexa, play this on Spotify. So you have a whole generation being born into a world with consumer-facing AI. The interesting thing is that these are faceless things, these AI companions. Siri, there's no visual to Siri, you know, outside of a little bit of coloration on the phone. Amazon, the only visual you get is a glowing light at the top of it. But if consumer-facing AI is a part of this generation as they are born into this world, they're going to start looking for more a visual experience, something that they can connect to but still have that AI companion. So we're working on a lot of stuff around that and making some cool experiences on the AI side. So we're really excited about that as well. And that's one of the experiences you'll be able to have inside the crypto universe.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. I think that, I guess increasing the sort of degree of personification of these AI assistants is a pretty interesting concept. And I think, obviously, especially when, you know, these cryptoids are going to sort of be in the pockets of these kids and, you know, can sort of like learn and grow with them, you can get to the stage where, you know, you have hyper sort of personalized and specialized AI. I think the world we're heading towards more broadly, you know, of like meaningful digital companionship becoming a much more common theme. Obviously, as these younger generations sort of grow and are used to that, you can totally see people coming home from school and like hopping on their favorite video game and playing co-op with their, you know, digital companion and stuff like that. It's a pretty cool world we're heading towards. It's super interesting. I wanted to just also touch on, you mentioned there's the Genesis edition then. I guess what can people expect from the Genesis drop of Cryptoys that, you know, maybe might not be there in terms of future drops and stuff? Like what are some of the perks you're trying to drive to this Genesis edition?
Yeah, it's going to be one of our scarcest drops. There's going to be limited edition. It's one of the first ones that we're going to do. So you have to have some baked in you know, kind of rewards and upside to those. And, you know, we've created this, this really cool backstory for these characters, this initial Genesis line. This is our version of Mario and Luigi, you know, so to speak, right? These characters are our own, and we're really excited about sharing the backstory of where they come from and building a lot of like the gaming world around that. So there's a lot of stuff we're working on, you know, from a token economics perspective, from a collectability perspective, and from a gaming perspective, just around the Genesis line. I can't talk too much about it right now because we're going to roll out marketing around it pretty soon. But if you're a Genesis holder of the Cryptoys, you'll definitely be getting some pretty cool perks, you know, for collecting these things early on in the journey.
No, I love it. Love to hear it. Excited to see all of that come together. One thing was just before we move on that I was, I mean, you and I, when we chatted a while ago, kind of touched upon it, but curious, like, how you're thinking. Obviously, like, one thing at a time feels like you guys already have a lot of stuff going on, but sort of longer term, how you reflect on, again, on that AI piece, just in terms of almost like, you know, psychological monitoring of like kids and stuff, you know, sort of flagging, you know, anomalous behavioral patterns or some kind of, you know, tendencies towards certain behaviors. Like, I wonder whether that's an area that you guys have sort of discussed internally, and whether, you know, longer term, it just seems like this could be an awesome sort of distribution mechanism for those types of technologies, and could be pretty interesting. Wonder what your sort of feel is on that, you know, as a father, whether that's something that's sort of interest or being discussed.
100%. I think, you know, when it comes to creating a product for kids or something that kids would use as well, you have to be very cautious about the way you build it and market it. And from a technology perspective, marketing, design, I think all of your concerns and all of your considerations and your decisions, they just feel, they're more heightened and the stakes are higher when you're doing with kids, especially as a dad. I can totally connect with that, right? It's very important for me to do this in the right way. So I think first and foremost, Cryptoys, to even sign up for an account, you're going to have to be 18 or up to even sign up for an account, because initially there's a lot of, you know, crypto and tokenomics and stuff like that related to this, and you're getting a wallet effectively, and there's, you know, play and earn components and stuff like that. We are working very diligently around parental controlled wallets and giving kids, younger audiences, access to the Cryptoys platform, but in a controlled, safe way. Okay, so we're taking that very, very seriously. When it comes to, and of course, as the platform scales and as things, you know, mature, you're going to be able to allow people at younger at age groups to even sign up for their own account. But right now, to start, we want to be very careful and make sure it's 18 or up to start. When it comes to AI, there's layers to artificial intelligence and how these things learn things over time. So especially when it comes to digital assets that might trade hands, right? You might spend, you know, months with something that, from an AI perspective, learned what your favorite color is and where you live and what city, and maybe knows what your brother's name is and whatever the case may be, right? And then there are things that it learns, such as like baseball statistics, or it could learn trivia or certain things, right, that it could learn through the game and through experiences. So we consider two different layers to the AI. You consider like learned shared knowledge, which is just like things that aren't sensitive data, but are important, you know, from an AI learning perspective and machine learning perspective. And then you have personal sensitive data, which is like your name, your family member's name, where you live, etc. We have two layers of this on the platform. And the idea is that if ever a NFT that has this AI component baked into it changes hands, it's effectively like taking like an Alexa and hitting the reset button on the Alexa from like a privacy standpoint. So we're being really careful about that. You might want to keep certain capabilities of the toy from like a learning standpoint of like, hey, this particular Cryptoy knows all of the basketball trivia from the 1970s to the 1990s, and you could ask it anything. You might want to keep that from an AI and skill perspective, but you want to wipe everything that's personal data. So we bucket those in two separate things, and the sensitive privacy bucket gets wiped completely whenever it changes hands, and you can wipe it personally at any time. So like those are the safeguards that we're putting in place, you know, when we're dealing with AI and how people interact with it.
Right. Makes a lot of sense. I love that piece as well. Obviously, like the more persistent memory and being able to, you know, carry that on kind of reminded me, for whatever reason, I don't know whether you've seen the TV show Altered Carbon, where they have the stacks in the base of their sort of spines, which like represent memory and consciousness, and you can re-sleeve basically, and, you know, switch bodies and stuff. So it would be kind of cool to be able to take your character through different skins as well, like that over time. Pretty interesting.
Oh, yeah.
You mentioned obviously NBA Top Shot earlier on, like being a massive factor in sort of driving the collectibles market to, well, you know, being the trigger event for the insanity that ensued. I believe you guys are also building sort of on the Flow ecosystem. Maybe you could touch a little bit upon, you know, ecosystem choice and yeah, sort of, you know, that the sort of decision that went into going with Flow ultimately.
Yeah, so I fully attribute this whole NFT bull run and market to what Dapper Labs have done with NBA Top Shot. And I mean, we can't understate or overstate, whatever you want to say, the impact that Dapper Labs has had on NFTs in general. It's just been incredible. You know, we took a poll the other day, like, how did you first get into NFTs or hear about NFTs? And for most people, it's either one of two things: CryptoKitties or NBA Top Shot, both of which were made by Dapper Labs, right? So we just can't, we have to, you know, respect just the impact that Dapper Labs has had on this space as a whole and how many people they've onboarded into NFTs and Web3. I don't think we're here, yeah, possibly even having this conversation right now if it wasn't for Dapper Labs and the impact they've had on this space. So that's one. Number two, what Dapper did with NBA Top Shot, it created this moment where, first of all, you had a recognizable brand like the NBA kind of give a stamp of approval to like digital collectibles. And that became an easy correlation for folks that collected basketball cards or just were fans of the NBA or were into like fantasy basketball or fantasy sports, a really easy on-ramp into digital collectibles and introductions. And the beauty about what Dapper did is initially, if you looked on their website, I think they changed it recently, but like initially, there wasn't even the word NFT on their website. It was just like own the moments, own digital collectibles and stuff like that in the NBA of your favorite superstar. And you were able to do that with a credit card. You didn't have to set up a MetaMask wallet. You didn't have to go to Coinbase and do a verification that waited 3 to 4 days and then buy ETH and then transfer to your MetaMask wallet and then figure out what a gas fee even was. And you just were able to seamlessly onboard people into this new world. Then, of course, people go down the rabbit hole and they find different blockchains and they want to go, you know, through different routes. But my personal opinion is that there is no better blockchain for consumer-facing Web3 apps than Flow. Because Dapper, I think, has nailed the user experience of just seamlessly getting people into this world very quickly without having to jump through 15 hoops. The user experience still on Ethereum and setting up MetaMask, and I don't knock it because I use it every single day and I have my MetaMask wallet and whatnot. It's incredibly complicated. I mean, even for folks like you and I who live and breathe in this world, we still have to look things up all the time on how to do certain things and figure things out, right? It's just not user-friendly. And I think when you're trying to build for impact and you're trying to reach millions of people, you're looking for on-ramps and like, what are the easiest on-ramps that you can create to introduce people to a new world? And any point of friction that you have to deal with is going to be a challenge for most people, because especially in gaming, right? Peers, like people can play games. There's so many options for them. They have their, you know, consoles, they have mobile phones, and each one provides a pretty seamless experience. I turn on my console, I play a game. Or I open my phone and I download a game from the App Store. I'm a click away if I have it already downloaded. It's seamless. If you're introducing a Web3 game and you have any level of friction whatsoever, that's going to be a big detriment to onboarding, you know, millions of people into this space. So for me, I was focused on, and then of course, not to mention gas fees and transaction fees, which, hey, Ethereum-based NFTs, sometimes you could price them low, but then you get hit with the gas fees and it makes it unaffordable for most people. So my whole thing is like, how can I create an engaging ecosystem to create digital toys and make blockchain-based games that are affordable, that don't have high transaction costs, and that are super easy to access, super easy to get started with. When you start looking down the options, Flow is the clear winner, head and shoulders above the rest. And then you get bonus points when you meet the entire team over there. When you meet Roham and Mickey and Redeema and the whole crew over at Dapper, they're just incredible people and super helpful. And they just want to, you know, build amazing things, you know, with their partners. And, you know, when I looked at building something that could potentially reach millions of people, it was clear that Flow was the blockchain I wanted to build on, and Dapper Labs was a partner to do this with. And, you know, we couldn't be happier about the way things are coming together. And I couldn't speak any higher of the folks over at Dapper. They really feel like an extension of our team versus like, you know, hey, let us know when you need anything. Like Dapper really, like, they're a message and an email away anytime, whether it's tech support or questions on Flow or marketing collaborations. They're just awesome. And having a team like that in your corner is just priceless.
Love to hear it. No, it seems super exciting that you guys have that going on, and great to hear everything's been so smooth so far. Obviously, yeah, you touched upon as well, like them kind of pioneering the larger IP coming into the space in the form of the NBA, which, you know, probably makes sense as consideration for you guys. You kind of touched upon earlier on, you know, the sort of IP partnership prospects. I mean, totally fine if you can't share anything to this effect yet, but would love to understand, you know, what that could look like. And maybe if you can share any sort of the partners you've been talking to, it would be interesting to hear a little bit about.
For sure. Yeah. Can't say names specifically yet, but I will tell you that some of the major toy brands that we've known and grown up with over the years are coming to the CrypToys universe. I would say that major sports leagues, some of the big sports leagues are coming to the CrypToys universe, and some major media companies as well, and their IP are coming over too. So those are kind of like the three big buckets that we focus on. If it's a toy IP, you know, or if it's a sports IP or partner, or if it's a big media entity that has iconic intellectual property that fits into the world of toys and gaming, then, you know, these are partners that we want to work with, and we're really excited. We should be able to make some announcements within the next couple of months on who some of these launch partners are. Can't unfortunately say. I would love to break the news on the podcast here, but it'll have to wait for a couple of months. And we'll chat offline. Yeah.
No, understood. Fishing for alpha. No, looking forward to that. And then, yeah, wanted to switch gear a little and I guess talk a bit more sort of, you know, general thoughts around things beyond CrypToys. Wanted to ask you kind of how you reflect on our sort of direction of travel as a digital species. You know, you said, you know, sort of you and I had like the gradual process of familiarizing with sort of the AI rollout. You talk about your kids now. Alexa's like, you know, one of the family members. And obviously, just looking at where we're going, increased immersion, more like sort of pervasive of like wearables technology and whatnot. Yeah, curious sort of what your sort of high level thoughts are around that, and especially as it relates to, you know, kids getting more and more involved with this stuff at a younger age. Yeah, curious for your thoughts there.
It was really interesting, and you know, to see my kids and their consumer behaviors and the things that they want and the things that they interact with, right? Like, you know, what do you buy when it's holiday season, and what are they looking for? So initially, you know, of course kids like toys and stuff like that. But I'll tell you, just recently, I asked my daughter what she wanted for the holidays, particularly for the eighth night of Hanukkah, which is like the big gift, right? And her answer was she wanted $50 worth of in-app purchases on her favorite game on her iPad. Now for me, I wanted a bike with my eighth night gift, or like a baseball glove or something like that. But I mean, it was just instant. Like, what do you want, sweetheart, for eighth night of Hanukkah? oh, Dad, $50 in in-app purchases for this game. Like, enter in your iTunes password. And dude, I am convinced now that if you showed my daughter, you gave her two options, a physical item or a digital item, I'm 90% sure she's going with the digital item. If there's a game that obviously supports it in a certain way and she could show it off to a lot of people and it does sort of, like, these kids are just, they're going towards that world and it's unavoidable. So like when people knock NFTs or they talk about, you know, it's not needed or whatnot, I think they're missing the point. I think kids are already kids, and not just kids, people our age too. We buy digital items all the time and in-game items. This consumer behavior is not new. Like, it's just happening more and more frequently, skins and accessories and whatnot in game. The only thing that NFTs are doing is providing the provenance and the ownership of the items so that you can really have it. If my daughter spends $50 in a game, she should be able to sell those items too so that she could buy more down the line. Like right now, if she were to buy a toy at Target and she would have fun with it for 3 months and she'd get bored of it, she can come to me and say, hey, Dad, I want another toy. And I could say, sweetheart, go sell that one that you don't play with on eBay or donate it to charity, you know, do something with it. But you can't do that in the digital world. And that's kind of ridiculous when you think about it, right? That we're just giving these monies to these like central organizations and gaming companies, but you don't have true ownership of it. Like, how nice would it be for my daughter to give a digital item to a kid that couldn't afford it, or give it to charity or something like that? She doesn't have the capability to do so. So when I think about NFTs, I think that people are kind of missing the point with it. It's not a monetization tactic. It's about giving ownership to this world that people are already participating in. And I think my daughter's generation and the generations coming after her are just going to continue to amplify the desire for digital items. And we need to give people control over these digital items. So it's just clear to me that, you know, there is no discrepancy. Before, you could say, like, of course I want the physical item instead of the digital one. I want to be able to hold it with my hands. I don't think you can make that argument anymore for most people. There's so many more benefits to the digital one over the physical one once the mind makes that turn and you get that utility and entertainment, you know, from that. And I think that's a big piece. Is like the NFT space so far, in my opinion, has been incredibly price driven. It's all about what's the floor price and how can I maximize the value of this particular NFT drop or whatnot. And that's like the first thing people look at is what's the floor and what's the price and the quantities. That to me is not going to be sustainable. What's sustainable is creating things that have entertainment and utility and creating enjoyment first and making things that are useful, fun for people that they get value out of. And if you do that, you create a very healthy economy on the secondary market and the price takes care of itself on that side. And you're not just focused on, you know, when moon and, you know, when what's the floor and whatnot. And I think we need to move past that if, you know, Web3 and NFTs are going to scale to millions and millions of people.
Totally. Makes a lot of sense. And I think just intuitively, right, like if spending time in virtual worlds, if this vision of the metaverse is to flourish to anywhere near its fullest potential, it seems like a pretty obvious core primitive, the ownership dimension, right? For people spending time in these worlds. So yeah, totally aligned there. Wanted to ask as well, what is one thing that you know, has become clear to you that you wish you knew when you were starting out on your whole crypto journey? Maybe a source of frustration or just something that you feel is interesting that you've learned along the way, which you would have liked to have known then?
It's a great question. I think that for the most part, when I started looking into NFTs in 2018 and I started building the CryptoIs project, I think everybody, you know, would think about NFTs and they'd be like, why do we need the blockchain for this? Like, what is the point of this? And like, you know, I don't understand why this could even be a thing. I think NFTs in general, for folks that aren't techie or they don't believe in this kind of technology or disruption, I think, again, they see NFTs and they're like, oh, I guess the best way to say is these right-click savers, right? Look, I got it for free, right? Or whatnot. I think the thing that I'm starting to learn that I wish I knew, years ago is I think everybody wants their mind to be changed on this stuff. I think everybody that is somewhat skeptical of this technology, I think it's on us to do a better job explaining it in ways that they can understand it. Like what we just talked about ownership. Like we spend so much time talking about NFTs and, you know, the technology behind it and the fact that a Bored Ape is now worth $250,000. And people say, but why? It's, you know, why is it worth $250,000? And I think we got to get back to like the basics of like understanding like ownership of items and how things can translate from a physical world and into a digital world. I make the analogy with people to kind of bridge them from Web 2 to Web 3. And I forget who said this, but it was a great comparison or a great analogy more so is NFTs, all they really do is they make the internet ownable, right? And when you think about that, like you could talk to people about like, remember domain names? Domain names were the first NFT, right? Because if you owned, you know, house.com or you owned desk.com or whatever the case may be, that was a valuable piece of internet property that you own. And what NFTs allow you to do is to take that ownership model and apply it to anything else that's digital. And what opportunities can exist if everything else that's digital can be ownable like a domain name was? And I think people want to believe, people want to turn the corner. You just got to give them an analogy to do so rather than it being something complicated like apes and cats and punks and whatnot. These are things that they can't really grasp around why is the value of a punk this amount or an ape. I think you need to talk to them about like what is something similar in Web 2 that you believe in, like domain names and why those could be valuable and how that could apply to everything else. And for a while, I think I was just, I wouldn't waste my time with folks that just wouldn't get it. And now I really take my time to kind of make sure that people understand why this is important, why this is a new emerging economy, and just go after it. And I think the second thing I'd say to anybody thinking about getting into Web3, and this actually applies at a higher level to doing something you believe in or are genuinely excited about, is just start doing it, go after it, talk about it as passionately as you believe in it, and the world will come around to your beliefs. Not the world as in the whole world, but the world around you will start to come around to your belief. You will attract the audience that you need to attract to build anything that you dream about. And I'm taken aback on a daily basis since I started this journey full time, is just if you constantly put things into the world that you believe in, the world rewards you. Frequently. But you have to do that. You have to tell yourself, I am going to put my ideas out there. I'm going to put myself out there. I'm going to take the leap. And it seems like to me that luck favors people that are bold and that are doing these things and that are outspoken and that they truly believe in these things that are different. So if you have a core belief, if you are in a job that you hate and you want to make the move to Web3 or to anything in particular, just start talking about it passionately and as openly as possible to everyone. And don't get worried about people stealing your ideas, signing NDAs. I found that to be a complete waste of time. Nobody's going to take your idea and run with it because ideas are a dime a dozen. Execution is everything. So just talk to everyone about your idea. Refine your pitch, refine your messaging. Find your people that gravitate towards you and then just keep going. And again, that's a lesson I learned recently when starting this company is like, man, I wish I would have taken the leap sooner because, you know, your audience is out there, your people are out there, but you gotta take that leap, you know?
Yeah, I love that. I'm a big believer in, yeah, learning by doing, jumping in at the deep end. Can't catch the wave if you're not in the water. It's always a fun one. I wanted to ask, what is the most impactful book you've ever read? Something that's resonated with you a lot?
That's a good question also. The one that comes to mind, there's two. First of all, Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle, right? Just staying present and in the moment. It's a really incredible book from a human perspective, right? That's something that I attribute a lot to personal development and growth. So I recommend that to everyone. From a business perspective, the most impactful book that I ever read was Venture Deals by Brad Feld and Jason Mendelsohn from Foundry Group. I started off starting Live Ninja, and I knew I had to raise a round. I had no idea how to raise funding. I've never done it before. I got recommended this book. And literally, the book teaches you exactly how to raise funding. And it gives you the perspective of the founder, the perspective of a VC, and how to basically engineer a financing round. And literally, that book helped me raise my first round of funding and taught me how to fundraise. So I don't think I would have been able to do that without that book. So from a personal standpoint, Power of Now, and from a professional standpoint, Hard to Beat Venture Deals and what that was able to unlock for my career.
No, I love it. Great answers. Both brilliant books. Similarly, what is your favorite game you've ever played?
So many good games, but the one game that really just gave me the chills was the first Metal Gear Solid on PlayStation. That story and the game dynamics, hiding behind walls and peeking through and, you know, stealth and all that stuff. And that whole, just the game design was just freaking incredible. That really resonated with me. Final Fantasy VII was another big one. This is not an answer that a lot of people say, but also Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, one of the best role-playing games of all time, in my opinion, particularly for a Star Wars fan. Dude, I got lost in that game for hours and hours and hours. I love that game. Halo, obviously, huge hat tip to Halo. Was just tweeting with Alexis Ohanian earlier today. GoldenEye 007 on N64, one of the best local multiplayer games of all time.
That was legendary.
So those are the ones that come to mind at first, you know.
That's cool. No, those are all interesting ones. I totally agree on the Metal Gear one as well. I think that was the Hideo Kojima making that one back in the day. So fucking good. Have you tried Death Stranding, his recent game that came out a couple of years ago?
No.
That's a pretty...
No.
I think it requires too much time, that game. It's deliberately got a relatively slow pace, but it's pretty fascinating conceptually. I recommend, if not playing it, just familiarizing with the narrative of that world and, you know, just checking out some of the stuff from that. I think it's a super interesting one. I guess it might include a game, it might be game related, but sort of beyond that, what comes to mind if I were to ask you about the most impactful digital experience you've ever had?
Okay. When I was 8 or 9 years old, this was right after my parents got divorced. Okay. I have an older brother that, This all happened over the course of the same year. So my parents got divorced. My brother got me a computer, my first computer. It was like a Pentium 386 or something like that. NEC. It was an NEC. It was a Compaq Presario after that, but the first one was an NEC. And that really opened my eyes to just being on a computer and the DOS interface. I just remember navigating through the DOS interface and learning those command prompts and then launching games and things like that. Then also playing the Oregon Trail quite frequently at school and that whole game and storytelling through that world. But in particular, right after I got into, computers, right after my parents got divorced, my older brother wanted to cheer me up. He drove me to Disney World from Miami to Orlando. It's about a 3.5 hour drive. And it was the first trip where just me and my older brother. And of course, the big thing is my mom's like, don't lose your younger brother. You know, make sure you watch after him. Make sure he doesn't get lost. So we're going in to a technology showcase. And we didn't really know what it was. It just said the technology of tomorrow in Disney World, right? It was like Epcot or whatnot. And it's a big crowd of people and some random guy with the Disney World, badge says, hey, do you want to be part of the show today? And I was like, of course I want to be part of the show. You know, I'm like a young kid. I'm really excited. And I didn't tell my brother where I went. I just went with this random guy. Probably not a smart move at the time, but he had the Disney World badge and whatnot. And I go up on stage and he basically goes, we're demoing virtual reality. You're going to be flying on Aladdin's magic carpet in virtual reality. And it was a huge rig, dude. Like, not like an Oculus, which I have here, but like a crazy freaking thing, you know? And they hooked me up, and then like they were demoing virtual reality and like that this is going to be a technology of tomorrow, that VR is going to be a big thing. And I just remember being on stage in Disney World for this showcase, and the curtain opens up. I see my brother in the crowd looking frantically like, where is Will? Oh my God, mom's going to kill me. Where is he? And I'm like, I'm waving. I'm like, Lior, up here. And I'm hooked up to this like huge freaking thing, you know? And then literally they're like, all right, we have Will up here. He's going to demonstrate Aladdin's magic carpet in VR. And like literally they put the VR goggles and I was flying on Aladdin's magic carpet. They even had like a fan blow in my face, so I felt like the wind on the magic carpet. And that was like, that was a holy crap moment for me from a technology perspective. So like between like getting my first computer and like that moment, and like playing these like basic games on like, you know, DOS-based machines, like that was like, knew I had to be involved in technology in some way, you know, with my career. So like those were pretty transformational moments within a short period of time.
I love it. That's a fucking awesome story. What a hilarious scenario to find yourself in. And how was the actual VR experience back then?
I only have the memory of what I felt like as like a 9-year-old kid, which was like, oh my God, you know what I mean? Like I'm on the magic carpet. I bet you if you put it on me now, it'd be like an 8-bit pixelated experience or something like that. But at the moment it was the greatest thing ever, you know?
That's really cool. It sounds like a pretty formative period, opening your eyes to lots of technology, getting your computer whacking on that VR rig. That's a funny story. I haven't had any like that before when I've asked that question. So there you go.
And then I would say a couple, like a year or two later, I forget when it was, but I got my first CD-ROM computer, a computer that had a CD-ROM drive, and I got Myst. Do you remember the game Myst?
I don't, unfortunately. It sounds like I'm missing out.
Oh, dude. Yeah, that was the first, like CD-ROMs had just came out, and Myst was like an adventure game. It was like a click-to-walk adventure game, and it was just so rich and immersive that you can have this kind of graphics and fidelity on your home computer. That was another big moment for me, is seeing that in real time. So all these things kind of stitched together.
I love it. Well, dude, it's been a pleasure having you on, learning more about the project and learning about some of those fun experiences that contributed to to your passion for technology and all you do now. For those listening in, where's the best place to follow along with you and Cryptoys, and just what should people be paying attention to?
Yeah, cryptoys.io to find more information about the project. Please find us on Twitter. You can join the Discord. That's where we post stuff first. And yeah, if you're tuned into those spots, I think that's where we'll announce a lot of these upcoming licensing deals and more info on the Genesis drop. So cryptoys.io and the Discord and the Twitter are probably the best places to start.
Awesome. Love to hear it. We'll make sure all those links are in the show notes. Well, thank you for coming on. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, Pierce, thank you, buddy. Appreciate you having me.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed it, please support the show by hitting subscribe on your podcast app, writing a review, or sharing this episode on Twitter and even LinkedIn for the boomers. Stay tuned for the next episode. It should be out soon.